Oh boy, Krista Carnes, if ever there was a time to have you call in, it's right now, my friend. Krista, who is our social media consultant here on WICC 600. How are you, Krista?
I don't really know. Just hanging on every day.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, so the big news, obviously, this week is about Parler for understandable reasons and just some of the moves that we've seen from the biggest social media outlets and some of the monopoly companies and everything. First of all, when you saw what went on with Parler and everything that developed, in, I would say since last week's riot at the Capitol, you know, what were your initial thoughts on that?
From a social media perspective?
Yes.
You know, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner.
I agree.
In some regard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, while we can give some credit to these companies for, you know, turning off some of this, you know, these lies and these conspiracy theories and the fact that they were used for so much of the organizing, whatever platform you're talking about, and people felt very brazen about, you know, just posting celebrations and encouragement and whatnot. It just rings a little hollow, although I'm glad. I think this is going to ultimately, you know, require us to have a much, much deeper discussion on what we want. You know, the old mantra of be careful what you wish for, be careful what you build, like Frankenstein's monster. I mean, we've talked about this before, right? Like, you know, they get away with, you know, they want their customers. They're making money off of us,
mm-hmm.
but in the end, they own it, right? They own it. You comply with terms of service that nobody reads, and that's, you know, finally, I think the pressure of the association became too great. I do think it was a little too late.
Mm-hmm.
How this will reset itself or will, you know, require, I mean, I think there's proof that this is a completely new animal when it comes to media. We have regulations on what can be said on TV. We have regulations what can be said on the radio, you know, and I think they're going to have to look at this as more of a media communications effort. But it's going to be a long process. But I think this is going to, like, when we look back in the history books, this will be a defining moment
mm-hmm.
for social media. As for Parler, like, so, you know, too bad, so sad. Like, I mean, they were running, you know, this is business. And if you're pro-capitalism, they really have the choice of doing business with these people or not.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a government-run operation. The free speech, I think these companies are exercising their corporate free speech by
mm-hmm.
making these declarations. But it's, I mean, it just goes to show you that everything is out there that you've put out there, whether you've erased it, whether you think that your profile is anonymous, it's really not.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is actually kind of interesting from, like, in a phenomenon is all of these sort of, you know, tech geeks around the country, these internet sleuths, the people that have really tapped into what the internet and social media can do, have been coming to the forefront to bring these people to justice. And I think at least, you know, identify them and allow the authorities to pursue them and do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a little gobsmacked by the whole thing, to be honest.
The big news this week was that Parler was shut down. And, you know, the question now, Krista, is I agree. I think that, you know, these social media sites probably should have started shutting things down a long time ago. But you now have the question, especially from people on the right, questioning, you know, Parler is a direct hit to the far right. So there's going to be questions whether or not we're going to see the same thing from the left, because, you know, we can't deny that it's been one party or one side that's been abusive, if you will, online. I think we've also seen it on the left side as well. So I think it begs the question, do you think we are going to see this massive overhaul of social media altogether? Or do you think only sites like Parler, where it could incite danger, are going to get shut down?
I think standards are going to get elevated. President Trump was not held to the same standards as everybody else. If you and I even got half as close to some of the things he said, we would have been shut down. I know plenty of people who are, you know, Democratic, progressive kind of activists, and they have said things that have gotten them shut down that would just surprise the heck out of you, because you look at it and you say, well, you made this very sort of benign comment, but someone decided that you needed to, you know, you needed to be blocked. And they have been blocked on Facebook, have been blocked on Instagram and Twitter temporarily, but they get squashed. We never held President Trump to the same standard, and I would argue that we should be holding those people more accountable. But in all of journalism and media, you know, truth is an absolute defense to all of it. If you bring in the truth, you can't argue with it. So show mm-hmm. show the receipts, so to speak. And so I do think we're all going to have to be more careful. I mean, I think everybody, I do believe the incoming president will have a social media team. I know they have a social media team. I know somebody on it, but like they are not going to put out falsehoods. They are not going to allow that stream to remain unchecked. And well, they shouldn't, right? I mean, this is a way to communicate with a lot of people very quickly. But if you've been watching, you know, some of our congressmen and other elected officials and stuff, they are voicing their opposition, but in a respectful way. And they are asking for proof when people come up with lies and conspiracy theories. And the problem is that's how it's been used, is mm-hmm. to promote and propagate lies and with no receipts. And it social media has an addiction factor, which I think we have to talk about. I mean, they're talking about it in psychology. People are looking at it. You get a dopamine fix. Every time President Trump tweeted, to his 80 whatever million followers, large amount of those I think were bots, but regardless, like he got a little shot of adrenaline, like he got his little fix. So to take that away from him explains why he's having such a hard time. But it had to happen, but it should have happened before. And I think Parler will come back, quite frankly. I think they will find somebody to invest in their own servers. I think they will, you know, they will come back in another form, and everybody has the right to create, you know, whatever space they want to have a conversation in. It's just a matter of monitoring, like, you know, how much
I think that's the big question I have, Krista, because I do agree that I think, I mean, I've said that from the beginning. I think President Trump actually would have had more people like him as a person if somebody was controlling his social media just to start or writing his speeches. But, you know, aside from that, you know, I have seen just on the other side, just to throw an example out there, like I remember when they were running, when Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were running, and Kamala Harris literally wrote something in regards to health care. And if Obamacare went away, that all these people, that millions of people would lose coverage. And that's just not true. And I mean, this was a tweet that was shared millions of times and it wasn't true. So I guess the question is, who is like the third party, if you will, who is going to check what's being true and what's false? Like, even if it's not offensive, like I agree, I think offensive things, okay, that's easy. Red flag, bad. But I think that if you sound credible and you look credible, like if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it must be a duck, but it's actually not a duck. You know what I'm saying? So, like, how do we make sure that both sides are actually putting out solid information, and when they're not, they're being squashed?
Right. And I think that's, you know, we're saying to Facebook, we're saying to, you know, Twitter, you guys need to monitor your own platforms. Or we're going to do it for you. I think that's kind of the legislative avenues that people are going to think about pursuing. And, you know, I mean, do we want government regulation on that? Do we want oversight on that? Or do we not? Because otherwise
what do you
have to trust that, right? And Facebook they're making so much money. And then this is only domestically, like internationally.
Oh, forget
it.
There's
long been arguments about, you know, what Facebook allows to be put on their site and inciting all kinds of stuff in other countries, and they're making and they're just making money hand over fist as a process. So I do think it's going to completely take a revisioning, and I think there are protected. I mean, you know, the politics is all about spin, right? So if Kamala Harris said that, there must be some, you know, way that she was present, like that she could present some evidence to make that case. Like,
correct, right, right.
Bold faced lie, you know, no, but.
But is it not fully truthful? Correct. You know, that's where
right.
It's,
at one point, is it a political opinion mm-hmm. versus I'm allowed to have an opinion? And I think that's what's actually getting caught up in this. That's fascinating to me and scary, is that I believe these people are saying, I believe this to be true. I believe Satanists are running the country. I believe, and they're kind of they're lacking in sort of education, and they're lacking in the critical thinking that requires them to say, okay, here's why I believe this, not I believe it and now I'm working backwards.
Right.
And that's what propaganda is. And that's long been
a problem.
The Trump world kind of, they know what they're doing. I mean, there's science that shows how people got recruited and thinking things that just weren't true. And there's just no, like, deprogramming that is impossible. And it happens on both sides. I mean, there's the majority of us fall in the middle. But when you bombard us with so much information, there's only so much you can take. And I think a lot of people are going to be leaving these social platforms.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to be looking hard. And I mean, so much, like even in our little mom's Facebook group here in town and stuff, like people are being emboldened. I mean, they're sharing their opinions. But it's making a difference. Like, there's some business people that have put up opinions that I'm like, I wouldn't go to you as a result of this.
Wow, really?
So I think there's going to be,
interesting.
I
mean, okay.
Like, I even saw, that's my choice as a consumer.
Right. Absolutely.
To choose what to do. And, you know, and those are natural consequences. And that's the other part of this social media stuff is these people are saying, I don't understand why I have consequences. Your free speech has consequences, right? Like, and you're standing on a street corner and you threaten violence, you're committing a crime. So, you know, how much of it is something that we can regulate and how much is something that we just need to agree that this is just not what we do.
It is
a Frankenstein's monster that we have to
somehow dismember a little bit. Krista, unfortunately we have run out of time, but thank you so much for weighing in on this, and I look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks.
Okay, very good, Melissa. Take good care.
Thanks, Krista. You too. We are checking in to Shelton right now, where Mayor Mark Loretti is, and he's got the latest on what's happening in Shelton. Hey, Mayor Loretti, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thank you, and yourself?
Yes, I'm so glad that you're back on the show, and I'm glad I'm going to have you on every other week to talk to some of our listeners who want to know everything going on in Shelton. Let's start by talking about back to school. Your students went back the beginning of this week after a long break and going virtual. How is that going, and what's sort of the latest on that?
Well, look, we're only one back. They started back on Monday, and, you know, it's anybody's guess how things will go. You know, it's not hard to understand that these are very sensitive issues. Parents and faculty and staff are, you know, waving red flags. You know, I think the majority of people want to be back in school, think the kids can be back in school. And I think we got to figure it out. I think we got to find a way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about staffing shortages? I know there were some bus service issues as well. What's the latest on that?
Well, again, only going into the second day, I think we're in pretty good shape. You know, when we've been out since November. So I think that anybody that was affected with COVID hasn't had an opportunity to remedy those conditions. And, you know, our staffing level should be fine at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's anybody's guess how that'll change going forward.
Yes, very true. Now, Mayor Loretti, I know that in the fall, I remember talking to your superintendent, actually, and it was mentioned that we were still not where we wanted to be with students having laptops at home, maybe not the high schoolers and middle schoolers so much, but elementary school students. Do you have an update? Does it seem like all the students in the public school district are set if they do have to go back to remote learning full time?
Well, what I do know is that I think that everybody from grades 5 through 12 have the Chromebooks.
Okay.
And you know, we don't have any backups, but, you know, there's also a shortage of Chromebooks, too, because everybody in the country wants them, because this is what we're doing for remote learning. But I think that this is, people have to understand that these are short-term remedies, and we need to move forward, get back to school 100%. Get back to some normalcy. The vaccine will help us do that. And good common sense and discipline will also help accelerate that.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Mayor Loretti this morning out of Shelton and crime prevention program. I heard there was an announcement about that and wanted to know if you could dive into that a little bit more. I had seen a little bit on this from you in the police department. But what is that about? How do people get involved?
Well, crime prevention really engages neighborhoods. They engage businesses and individuals throughout the community where areas are affected. You know, these spikes in crime are cyclical. They're not uncommon. They're going on all over the country. And this is one way of combating it and staying on top of it. You know, we have to focus on the area that's most affected at any particular point in time and push back. And that's what we're doing.
Okay, so how, if I have a listener right now who lives in Shelton and they want to get involved or something, they want to be involved with this program, how do they do it? What does that entail?
Well, I think there's a number on the website that they can call to that will take their information and then someone will get back to them. You know, but, you know, look, we can't be everywhere at once. You never can be. And so it never hurts to have an extra set of eyes and ears out there. And we've been successful in the past by engaging neighborhoods. As an example, when you have a rash of burglaries, which does happen from time to time, and people have to understand that, then you know, you need to have the eyes and ears of people who live in a specific location to filter back information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's so true. It really takes a village. And we can only rely on the police so much. It does come down to the public also having a hand in making things happen. So I appreciate that. Now, there was a pretty big announcement actually last week from Center Stage Education Center talking about reopening. They're going to, I guess they already put out their 2021 spring lineup, and people can actually start to register this week for it. What were your thoughts on Center Stage Theater reopening? I know just like any other theater company, most other education areas, they've been shut down because of COVID since the spring of last year.
You know, that's correct. You know, they're not a major operation, so I think that they're one of those organizations that can control the social distancing aspect of having people in person. And it really takes some planning and some discipline to be able to do that. And some organizations can and will do that. It's not practical for the larger venues, but I think in this case, we certainly can. And again, it's another step forward towards normalcy.
Mm-hmm. And my last thing, Mayor, before I let you go, Governor Lamont announced yesterday that people 75 and older can start to book appointments to get their COVID vaccine as of next week. Obviously, we need to be patient with this process. It's going to be a lot of people rushing to get that vaccine. Do you know off the top of your head if there are locations in Shelton that people can keep an eye out for where you can get your vaccine for COVID?
You know, I know there's a couple of locations that the local hospitals have been actively setting up, Bridgeport Hospital, Griffin, places like that. The best place to check is on the website. You know, I think that these places, they change, they modify their hours of operation, you know, depending on how they're affected or not affected by daily events. And, you know, look, Connecticut has an aging population, so I think this comes as good news to all those folks who are in that category.
No question at all. Well, thank you so much, Mayor Mark Loretti of Shelton, this morning. We appreciate it, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
All righty. You take care.
All right, you too. Julia, so glad to have you back on the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. We love having you on the show. So I thought this was a really great topic, not in the sense that I agree with it, but you're seeing a lot of clients lately that are struggling with infidelity. First of all, what are you finding? Obviously not, don't tell us the names, obviously, because of confidentiality, but everything. But why are you finding couples are committing infidelity?
What happens in a relationship is you end up getting married and taking your vows for better, for worse, richer, poorer, sickness, health, till death do you part, and you end up drifting away. And the simplest question that goes unaddressed is, what do you really need from your spouse? I mean, Melissa, if you were to go home and ask your husband, what do you need from me? We don't have those simple conversations. And what happens is when you don't get your emotional needs met, or you don't get your other needs in your that you have met, you look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes the emotional attachment, which becomes the physical attachment, which becomes the infidelity.
Mm-hmm. I also think, Julius, we're too scared to be criticized. I know in my own marriage, for example, before we got married, one of the biggest problems, my husband and I both, we're both cancers. We are born in July, and we're both very stubborn. We're both very strong-headed. We both like to be right. So one of the biggest things, one of the biggest challenges before we decided to get married was we had to work out, could we put our egos away? Could we put a wall down and say, hey, you know what? Like, if I'm saying I need this, I don't need you to think I'm attacking you. I need you to be open to change. And that was something, right. You know, for 2 years, we were engaged for 2 years because we had to see, like, can we pull this wall down or are we going to look elsewhere to find someone who will do this for us? And I think we're scared of being criticized or being told, yeah, actually, you could do this or you could do that. And I think that might be another reason, correct me if I'm wrong, why sure. people think, I'm just going to go elsewhere. I'm not even going to address it with my spouse.
Yeah, right. And it's that pride that you mentioned, too. I want my needs met as opposed to putting your needs above my needs. Mm. And I found that healthy marriages are where each partner, you get up in the morning and you look at your husband or he looks at you and says, how can I make Melissa's day better? What can I do to make her day better? When he has that kind of a mindset, then he puts your needs above his needs. And I'm not saying he should be a doormat or you should be a doormat or anybody should be a doormat. But I'm saying that there are so many needs in a relationship that go unmet because we get so busy with the kids and with different types of activities that there's no communication.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Now, what if it already happened? Okay, so somebody committed infidelity. They have cheated on their spouse. Here we are. You've got one spouse who is maybe feeling remorseful. And the reason I say maybe is because there are spouses who knowingly are just bored with their marriages. And they probably shouldn't have taken those vows to begin with because they can't commit. But other people are feeling like, I really messed up here and I can't afford to lose my marriage. But then you've got the other spouse who's been cheated on. So where do you go from here? How do you truly recover from infidelity?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've seen what I would offer your listeners is there is hope. There is always hope. And I've seen in marriage counseling that even if one of the partners wants to work at it, there's hope for the marriage to be salvaged. But what has to happen is the partner who cheated wants to say, hey, forgive me, please, forgive me. And what the other one needs is they need to make sure their partner understands the pain they felt.
Mm-hmm.
So don't ask for forgiveness, but ask for, do you really understand? Can you articulate how badly that made me feel when you did this? And that's what really has to happen. Healthy marriages are built on forgiveness, perseverance, commitment, compromise, and communication. And love is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
There is hope, though. I want to emphasize that. I've seen so many marriages that I've worked with through the years. They've recovered from this, but that's because the partner really comes humbly to the other and says, hey, listen, I really screwed up. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that I hurt you. I know I understand how I've made you feel. Maybe I don't understand, but I'm trying to understand how I made you feel and what my actions did to you. There's tremendous healing in humility and in empathy.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Julius Dudix this morning, our morning show counselor. And you know what else, Julius, that is really, really sad, to be honest. I think that there are a lot of situations. I can think of one very jarring situation. I won't name names, but someone I know very close to me, her husband cheated. And she's a very strong Christian and, you know, and it was a very painful process, but she decided to stay with her husband. And I know she didn't tell a lot of people because society will tell you that you're weak, that you're doing the wrong thing. How dare you not have self-respect for yourself? How dare you stay with someone who did that? And I remember encouraging my friend that, look, we're humans and we sin and we mess up and we screw up. And okay, maybe you didn't cheat on your husband, but I'm sure you've done things to hurt him as well, which actually may have led to his decision. Not to say that she caused it by any means, but I think that a lot of times people will file for divorce or separation because that's what society expects you to do. So how would you encourage people to not follow society? Don't be afraid of what society is going to tell you because they are going to tell you you're making the wrong decision. But if it's right for your marriage to forgive and to move forward, even if it's a long process, what would you say to someone to not listen to society's, I would say, norms, which is to just walk away from the marriage and start fresh?
Sure. I think there's strength in humility. And when individuals understand that being angry really doesn't make you happy, being unforgiving doesn't make you happy. I think the barrier to happiness many times in this situation is the spouse's desire to get back at the other spouse. And when you decide that you like yourself more as a loving person and not as an angry person, you can begin to move forward. But that will take a while, take a long time. And the idea is you've got to experience the pain and feel the pain and the grief. It's like a belly. Somebody's punched you in the belly, and it just hurts so badly. And that's where if you go through that process, and again, I'm not saying be a doormat, and I'm not saying let your spouse do anything and walk all over you. But I believe there's strength in humility, and there's strength in forgiveness and perseverance and commitment. And there is hope. There is hope.
Now, Julius, I think this is a really touchy subject, and I wish we had hours to talk about it and to dive into it. But if people want your help, if they've experienced this or if they are going through the pain of this, how can they reach out to you directly?
Sure. You can research me on Facebook and LinkedIn, but if you want an appointment, feel free to contact. Don't contact me via Facebook. I've had a couple of people do that, and I don't really check my Facebook like I should. So I would encourage to give me a phone call at 203-243-7714 to set up an appointment.
All right.
203-243-7714.
Julius Dudix, we always appreciate having you on the show. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you for your work, Alyssa. Keep at it.
Appreciate it.